Welcome to Conversations with Z and Vindesh, a weekly discussion that explores common life challenges and offers practical solutions. Learn more at dharmamedia.com. That's dharmamedia.com. Welcome to Conversations with Z and Vindesh. And today we're talking about navigating uncertainty. So Z, this is a timely topic. We're in, what is it, month five of this global pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I think people have adjusted, but anxiety, at least in my circle, seems to be picking up. A lot of the people that I know, they feel like they want answers. They've been in this period for long enough. It's a sense of, I just want things to get back to normal. I just want to be able to lead my own life. And what's interesting about this is that when I look at a lot of these situations, there's actually nothing wrong. So there's no problem. People are going about living their life. They're spending more time with family. In some cases, they've left the cities, so they're in bigger houses. They've got outdoor space. We've talked about just dropping the sense of urgency, the need to do something, and there's a lot of value in that. So there's a lot of benefit to the time and just immersing in whatever life presents and enjoying this period. We don't know exactly what's going to happen, but hell, why not just sit back, wait, see what comes next? Almost like sitting in a movie and watching it evolve. But just the way that we're wired, there's this sense that we need to know what's going to happen next, even if it doesn't cost us anything. So even if the circumstance right now is perfectly fine, we start to feel unsettled because we don't know if our kids are going to go back to school, for example. We don't know whether this stay-at-home policy is going to end and we're going to be back in the office or we're going to be working from home. We don't know if there's going to be a vaccine. When are we going to be able to plan travel and plan vacations and go to all these places that we've wanted to go to for a long time? And just that constant rattling around in our mind of, oh my goodness, when is this going to happen? I need to know. I want answers. That desire that we have creates anxiety. And it really eats away at people. And it's something that I think goes on in the background. It takes a toll over time. I was talking to some relatives and they were saying, yeah, my God, there were a couple of days in the past week where I almost broke down because of anxiety, because there's so much uncertainty in this period. And then we almost make it worse because it's become normalized, as we talk about so frequently. And so someone might be anxious and other people validate that and say, oh yeah, my goodness, this is such a crazy time, such a stressful time. And certainly for some, it's very stressful. There are people who are really struggling. There are people in India, for example, who had to get back to their village 600 kilometers away on foot, on bicycle. They didn't know if they'd be able to survive the journey. That's very stressful. In this country, there might be people who haven't been able to get unemployment benefits. They're worried about their next meal. That's stressful. But for a lot of the people that I know, they don't face those same conditions, yet they still feel the stress, which becomes self-created, self-imposed, self-validated by the peer group. And this need for certainty is really interesting. So as you and I talked about, one, it creates this anxiety. Two, there's a huge cost to wanting certainty, which is it shuts down a tremendous range of options. And I think one of the beautiful aspects of life is that it's fluid. It's not just a linear journey from point A to point B. You think about progress, just the evolution of our species, the different inventions that we've created. It's very nonlinear. I mean, we go about our lives the way we normally do for a period of time. And then you've got some discontinuity. So you see an opportunity, you seize it, or you have some insight and you break from what you've normally been doing. You go in a totally different direction. And that's the reason that Elon Musk can go in a 20-year span from having nothing to having $70 billion because you can capitalize on those opportunities. But so many of us just shut that out because we're so concerned about protecting what we have and protecting the life that we see in our mind. We want that certainty and we're willing to trade that certainty for the energy it takes to maintain those conditions and also the other possibilities that could happen that could make life a lot more interesting, could give us a lot more fulfillment. So this is an area that I thought would be interesting to explore, particularly during this time where we're all looking for answers. And maybe, Z, we start out by asking, where does this come from? why do we feel such a need for control or a need for certainty?
Well, yeah, Vin, it goes into, as it's taught to us in the yogic sciences, the maya, the illusion of life, illusion. It's not real. Certainty and uncertainty beget one another. So there are certain things that we count on, the change of seasons, but they do not always happen at the exact hour, at the exact day, all the time. There are always omens of the change of season, but as our environment is changing, as the weather patterns are changing, we have to adapt to new normals, whether we like it or not. Also, the illusion of certainty is a construct in our own mind, right? We've constructed a routine. Well, the construct of the brain likes that. We like this idea of normalcy, even if it's unhealthy. We like normalcy. We like to frame things in simple ways. That's the way our brain works. It saves energy. There's fewer motor neurons you need to do that in its inception. The initial construct costs a lot. The maintenance of that costs little. So we'll say that, oh, I'm certain this and that, but we know from all the sages of all the cultures together is that the only thing you can be certain of is death. Mm-hmm. It's the only real certainty. But even that, the time of that death is unknown. It's based on the whim of fate or circumstances. You can predict. You go to the doctor. I have people I work on all the time. They come in. They'll come in with their blood work, and they'll say, tell me what's going to happen. I just need to know exactly what's going to happen. And what I always do, I present them with a number of different scenarios that they can choose from. Well, if you keep going in this direction, this is certainly going to happen. I can't tell exactly when, but it's not if, it's when. Now, if you take this other direction, you've given yourself another option of probable outcomes. You see what I'm saying? So if you come here and you've ruptured the disc in your back, and you say, what's going to happen? Well, I show them a spinal cord model, and I'm going to show you, once you have degraded that disc and the other disc starts grinding on it, every night you go to sleep, it's going to try and heal together. You're going to find yourself stiffer and stiffer and stiffer and stiffer and less able to move without pain. And eventually you're just going to be in pain and not mobile. Now, if you take another alternative, if you bolster, do your PT a certain way, take out inflammatories in your diet, then you're going to have a different trajectory to that outcome. And now here's another option. You can go get surgery, fuse things together, cut the nerves, and you'll lose mobility and probably have bladder incontinence, but you'll be certainly not having pain, just embarrassment. So you're always making a trade-off for this idea of certainty. But you want to look at certainty in a liquid model, right? So during this whole pandemic, we know for certain that living on Earth has its challenges. Living in densely populated areas certainly has other challenges. Just the sheer number of people exchanging microbes causes the immune system to act a certain way. Add that to the various level of health management of those people in that densely populated group. So for people that live healthy and are outside of the norm of that population group, they certainly need to stay away from sick people. That's for certain. Because if they don't do that with a high degree of certainty, they will certainly catch what the other people have. It's not rocket science. But also, once we have reached a certain threshold of certainty, we are certainly all going to be sick. And certain people will survive that sickness, certain people won't. Then I work it backwards. I say, well, who are the people that certainly won't survive? Well, the people who are certainly sick and have compromised health all the time. They have more challenges dealing with life on Earth. So this idea of certainty and uncertainty that drives people's temperament is illusionary. It's chasing the phantom, so to say. So we want to not have hundreds of uncertainties in our life. How do we do that? By accepting uncertainty. There are certain things you can do that reduce the odds of, like playing the lottery, right? You certainly won't win the lottery. But there's a small degree of that uncertainty that's less uncertain. So too, when you get in your car and you're drunk, you certainly have compromised ability. And the chances of you having an accident have increased greatly. So we want to change the certainty model to the averaging model. Then we can have more management over it, the odds of something happening. But it goes both ways, right? Because there's an inclusion of your own actions in that. So this idea of being certain about something will drive you crazy. It plays into the idea of trying to control destiny, right? But on the other end, you do not necessarily have to be a passenger in the clown car of fate. There are things you can do that reduce the odds of. Thus, you can be certain that you've reduced the odds of hardship befalling you, right? You see what I'm saying? So I think as we change the way we speak about certainty and uncertainty, we can see what drives people into this insane state. So with the pandemic, we know that what's happened now is we can certainly know that we know nothing about it because it's been reduced to politics. If you support the president or the government from a conservative or right-wing point of view, you don't wear masks. If you don't support the president and you focus on the liberal aspects of the government or the progressives, whatever they call it, you do wear a mask. There's no science in that. There's the illusion of stability is what you're looking for. I always tell people, be very honest with yourself. As you do your tribal indexing, what makes you feel comfortable? And then you will define certainty by what's comfortable for you. You define uncertainty by what's uncomfortable for you, what's unfamiliar. Now we have different conversations, right? So you have relatives that you're very fond of and you love. You want to be certain that they don't get sick. Well, you can't do that because you have no control of their life. You don't control their destiny. What you can do for your own sake to make you feel better is offer them a bit of guidance and comfort as they navigate the same uncertainty you're navigating. You see how crazy it gets? But you can't control the outcome of life. Nobody can. But we can affect the odds of something, right? The odds of you getting run over by a horse is greatly diminished if you stay out of Amish country, right? So you're not too, you can calculate the odds. So you calculate the odds to a factor that is astronomically in your favor, then you can call that certainty. But even that's uncertain. You never know when a rogue Amish will come visiting Santa Monica for the gay parade, right? You never know. And their horse stampedes you. So you know for certain that Caitlin's going to have a hard time dating. Okay? But we can reduce that certainty and add a bit of uncertainty, which there might be a snowball's chance in hell that she gets a date by her doing certain work. Is that right, Caitlin? Certain work she does. And she can move those odds in her favor. Like she knows if she buys one lottery ticket, the odds of her winning are not that great. But even if she buys a few million, the odds only shift a small way. So she can apply that to her dating algorithm. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then she can have a sense of certainty, although bleak, that she will get a date. You see? So this idea of certainty and uncertainty, we have to let it go. We have to turn into the odds of. So for those of you who are working on the certainty, uncertainty, the odds of you walking into a Carl's Jr. with a bunch of people in compromised health, hacking and sneezing in Carl's Jr., the odds are you'll probably get what they have. So once the odds have reached a certain, what would you say that threshold? Let's see if it's economic then. What would be the threshold of odds that you could then call that certain? What would that be?
I use 60%.
Okay. Yeah. So once it's at the odds are 60%, then you can call that certain.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I wouldn't call it certain, but I'd say it's high enough where I'm assuming that it's going to happen.
It's not as uncertain. Mm-hmm. There you go. So you're dealing with certain and uncertain and the odds of. So I would tell people to help really deal with the anxiety on sickness and disease, you can pretty much calculate it, right? So we're going through the COFIFI pandemic, and some of you have a limited number of people you're dealing with, right? With any flu, virus, venereal disease, or whatever. You have a smaller community, the less the odds are of you certainly getting that disease, right? So you can rest assured within a certain degree of certainty. You see how it works? So you just don't want to get caught up in that. The anxiety blinds you and corrupts your ability to do this calculation. Animals do it all the time. The gazelle goes out to the watering hole, and he knows the odds of them getting eaten by a lion at noontime is probably 40-60 in his favor. Dying of thirst might be about the same. Maybe it's 65-35 or something, right? Mm-hmm. So then he says, there's a high degree of certainty I can get some water and make it back based on the odds. See, certainty is based on the odds of. So this is easily now calculable. Caitlin knows if she dates 1,000 guys on text-to-date.
On text-to-date, oh my God.
That she might find 2 guys that are not catfishing her, right? She has a problem. She told me the other day she got catfished. So
I did not go to him.
So she's on Data Twitter, Datagram, Data Text, and she has to date 1,000 guys. And you know what? She'll meet one. It might be this year or the next, mm-hmm. or the next year, but she will have a certain degree of success if she plays those odds.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, man. That's an inspiring story. I'm wiping the tears from my eyes right now.
I have hope.
Yeah. Anything can happen.
Anything.
And with enough work and time, it might play out.
So certainly anything can happen.
Mm-hmm. Right? So let's explore this for a second, because I think you're absolutely right. I'm going to put things in slightly different terms, because mm-hmm. I've got a statistics business background, and mm-hmm. I think in terms of averages and then uncertainty sure. around that, exactly the way you're talking about it. And if you want to use fancy terms, you can talk about means, which is the average, and then standard deviation, which is how far away from that average can you expect to be.
That's right.
But people are not good statisticians. That's just a bias that we have built in, and mm-hmm. I see this in finance all the time, where you know that most of the time you have no idea what's going on. So you take a look at something like financial markets. There are a million reasons why prices could go up or they could go down. It could be that there are big buyers or sellers coming into the market. It could be some rumor. That rumor proves to be false. It goes in the other direction. It could be self-fulfilling. It could be that everyone thinks that the market's going higher. Mm. And then the people who are sitting back and are watching this, who are like, there's no way it can go higher, they start saying, there's probably something that I'm missing, or even if I'm not missing it, I feel like an idiot because I go to a cocktail party and all my friends are making money. So the hell with it. I'm just going to buy, and then things go higher and higher.
Right.
Because everyone believes that they're going higher, so no other reason. Sometimes there's no logic. I mean, it's just human behavior, and it's belief and the composite of millions, perhaps billions of decisions. It's highly nonlinear, so you hit tipping points in one direction or the other, and you can go to extremes, which is kind of like an insane way of how the world works. I've always thought of financial markets as a laboratory where you can observe real-world behavior, but it's just magnified, and it happens a lot faster. So we see these same things in real life. You just generally don't see them as frequently, because most of the time things are stable, and then you hit some tipping points, but you forget about the tipping points, and you think, oh yeah, I can predict my life. I can control what's going to happen. And in fact, that's why I find this pandemic so interesting, because it's the first time that I've seen changes in the real world happen as quickly as in the financial markets, just because of the idea that we have to shut everything down. So forget about the science, as we've talked about. we're not experts, we're not epidemiologists, but we've gotten to a point where people collectively were afraid enough, and enough people started saying, let's shut down the global economy. You hit a tipping point, and just because of that belief, everything shut down. So you think about that, and you realize that we live in this complex, dynamic world. There are certain things which are more predictable, certain things which are less predictable. And I think reasonably intelligent people know this. But even intelligent people are almost willfully blind to this and spend incredible amounts of time searching for certainty where you can't find certainty. So you might know, as an educated person, that there's a whole distribution of outcomes that, to your point, any one date could pay off for Caitlin, and it could be the first date, it could be the 500th date. Mm-hmm. You don't know, but you know that if you do it enough, you play the game long enough, things will work out.
Sure.
That's how the insurance industry is built. You think about life insurance, I don't know who's going to die when, but I know if I'm insuring 1 million people, I've got a pretty good sense for what that distribution is and how many are going to die each year, and I can underwrite the insurance. So we all kind of know this, but if you think about how people behave, and I see this in my industry all the time, people refuse to accept that uncertainty, and it leads to really bad decisions. So it leads to people, number one, chasing the things that have done well. And so you extrapolate what's happened over the short term. You're like, okay, Apple has done really well, so I'm going to buy Apple. And hell, maybe it works out. I mean, Apple's been good for 15 years or yeah, probably about that time. But at some point it won't. And if your strategy is always to just extrapolate what's happened in the short term, you're going to get burned because sometimes things will continue. A lot of times they reverse and go in other directions. So you end up, I mean, that's why if you look at the average investor, they do horribly. They're always buying at the top. They're selling at the bottom because they panic. They don't know what's going on. Then the market starts to rise. They feel like they're missing out, so they jump back in. So they're always waiting for a point where they're certain that it's the right time to get in. But by the time it's certain, there's an expression on Wall Street, when the smoke clears, the trade is over. So by the time you have certainty, the market's already moved. You've missed out on a 50% return. And yeah, you can get in and there's not much risk, but there's no upside. Right. And actually there is risk because everyone who's bought, who's wanted to buy has already bought. And now if there's some bad news in the other direction, which comes out of the blue, then everyone suddenly sells and it goes, what you thought was going to go higher actually goes lower. And then you've got people who demand certainty. So let's say you are buying 10 stocks for someone. And even if the overall portfolio does well, they'll say, well, these three stocks didn't do well. Why did you buy them? Why didn't you know that they would go down? So there's this demand from intelligent people for, it's not even a demand, it's an expectation that we're going to be able to predict the future. And we can do that with a high degree of confidence. And it's ludicrous. Of course, no one can do that. But I guess I'm exploring why that comes into play, because it seems to be so prevalent in the people that I deal with. Even in myself, there have been times where I've looked for more certainty than is possible. I mean, I kind of know if I were able to step back, and maybe this relates to the anxiety. There have been times when I've been just so into the routine of what I'm doing and the analysis that I'm hunting for certainty. And if I step back, I might say, okay, this is ridiculous. I'm never going to get to that point. But whatever I'm doing, the momentum of that takes hold and I keep on looking for the exact solution, the perfect answer. And that behavior seems so prevalent that I just want your thoughts on this. How do we get around this, or why is this so hardwired? Because what you're saying is absolutely true. You put it in different terms than I did, but it's the same point, that you can only play the averages. You can get a sense of the odds. You know that there's going to be random outcomes around that average. There are going to be some cases where you can't even calculate the odds because you just don't know.
Right.
And that's life. But I think if you can accept that, if you can design life strategies based on odds, and if you can also accept the situations where you can't calculate the odds, you can live life more intelligently. Why is it that we're so hardwired to do the opposite?
I have something for the opt-outs here, based on what you were saying. So this idea of certainty and uncertainty, this illusion. Let's change our narrative, because a big part of our mission, that mission of mitigating human suffering, the suffering, most suffering, as the Buddha says, is self-imposed. It is our failed narrative. It's the failed way we frame our reality that brings us the most suffering. So I have some ideas based on working with people for 30 plus years in this capacity and having my 50 plus years of practice. What have I seen? Is if we could frame our narrative, create another way of illustrating our reality, it brings us great comfort. So change the word certainty, uncertainty, and just simply say the odds of. Now when you do that, you also add to that an A plan, a B, and a C plan. So you want to go to this restaurant, you're certain that there's going to be room. But you say the odds of there being room at that restaurant is 80%. So I'm 80% certain. But now I'm going to have a plan for that 20% fail. So let's go to this other place that's pretty cool. It's not our first choice, but it doesn't create congestion in our mind. So if there's a thresholding of anxiety, of uncertainty, we can relieve that pressure. We can mitigate that pressure by going right to plan B. And if plan B doesn't suit us, and the odds of there that other restaurant accommodating us is about 60%. What I'm certain of is that there's food at home and I enjoy being at home. That's plan C, to come back home and just hang out. So when you give yourself a different narrative, the odds of, the alternative to, see, give yourselves alternatives. Give yourself room to flow, room to move. If you notice, the people that suffer the most have not given themselves an alternative. It has to be that way or the highway. One way, and it brings them nothing but grief and despair. So if you have this opportunity to say the odds of, and I have a few options, I have a few alternatives that will bring me a reasonable amount of contentment, then there you go. It goes back again. What we talk about, the most basic fundamental thing is dating, right? The odds of Caitlin finding Prince Charming is pretty low. But how about just finding the Duke of Earl? Then she knows if she doesn't get her alternative to Prince Charming is what, Caitlin? The Duke of Earl, right?
Yeah, that'd be dope.
Right, there you go. And if you don't get the Duke of Earl, you could get the Joker of Jacksonville. So she still have a someone of reasonable note, and she just flowed through her alternatives. All of us should be able to flow through the alternative so that we are not overtaken by the anxiety associated with the desire to have certainty. It's like when you listen to people and you say, tell me for certain what you feel. Well, feelings are fluid and transient. Right now I feel pretty good, but in a few hours after I've digested that bad tofu, it may be different, but I'm still with you, but in an alternative condition. So leaving yourself open for the odds of and the alternatives, right? Mm-hmm. Give yourself alternatives. And that is for the more enlightened mind. But when you look for certainty, you will always find it accompanied by various degrees of anxiety, which are never good. No degree of anxiety is good. So during the Covfefe pandemic, we know there's certain odds of people getting sick. You can look at it. You can look at the reports. You can look at the feedback. We know if we have compromised health, we're on medication, things aren't going well, that we're metabolically compromised. We know that. So the odds of us getting sick are a bit higher than if nothing else is going on. Now, even if nothing else is going on, the odds of you getting sick are less, but if you get sick, your odds of survival are greater. But there's no certainty. We don't know if you have to get on the ventilator and the poor person working in the hospital has the skills of Jonte driving and just wrecks your throat. Right? You know Jonte's a horrible driver. You know if he's intubating you, he's probably horrible at intubating. Cuts your trachea, slices it open, you die of embolism of the blood. But the odds of Jonte being there are very low because he's a slacker. Just the odds of him going to work are very low. So you're pretty safe. You guys understand what I'm saying? I need you to change the way that we frame our narrative. I keep going back to that. Because to be well, instead of saying being certain, say, what are the odds of? So when your wife calls you, Vin, and says, what time are you going to get here? You said, well, the odds are I get there by 5. Or are you certain? Oh, 80%. But give me that 20% in case there's a traffic mishap. Of course, in California, it's 50-50. Mm-hmm. Traffic in L.A. is 50-50. The odds are 50-50. Mm-hmm. Right? So accept that. And then the minute you start thinking like that, your anxiety has gone down. So you sit there with your family member. And you say, I'm eating healthy. I'm living healthy. I got a few health problems that I'm working on. And I'm not really hanging out with a bunch of sick people. So the odds of me being affected by COFIFI are very minimal. Right? Mm-hmm. And so then you can then ratchet down your anxiety over mind for the past and dreading the future mechanism. You can just short circuit that mechanism and it never kicks in. And you're living a life that has a certain degree of predictability. Not certainty, but predictability. So that's where you want to get to. Again, there are no hard concrete absolutes. So you can predict certain things. If you are doing other activities of any kind, if you're a fitness person, you want to get well, you want to get in shape, what are the odds of you losing weight by Christmas? Right? Say you're a fat body and you want to lose weight by Christmas. You count your calories, you know your intake, you ratchet your intake down 20%. Increase your activity 20%. Listen to what I'm saying. Decrease your intake by 20%. Increase your activity by 20%. And now the odds of you reaching your health objectives have increased by what, Vin? You're a finance guy. What does the number look like?
Well, it's got to be close to 100%.
Look at that. You see that? And that's from a Wall Street guy. They know everything. See? So it's really that easy. 20% reduction in calories. A 20% increase in activity. Caloric. 100% guaranteed. That's an interesting math. But he knows everything about this kind of stuff. That's not my expertise. So Vin says you have a 100% chance of reaching your wellness goals.
Well, I'm just saying you got a 100% chance or close to it that you're going to drop weight if you're eating less and working out.
Did you hear that, folks? That's from an expert.
Whether you meet your fitness goals, I don't know. I don't know what those goals are.
We have to know what the goals are. I get what you're saying. Everybody get what he's saying. So too in mitigating pain, right? I have a lot of people that are dealing with chronic pain. Here's the thing. You look at the variables that are causing the pain. Let's say I talked to my dear friend, my big baby sister here, Planet Janet, and she's talking about some back pain and degenerative disc. So we know the spine has 33 vertebrae, 4 unique sections, each one expressing movement of the body in varying degrees. It allows us to move 90 degrees to the left, 90 degrees to the right, or lateral to medial. It allows us 180 degrees forward and backwards, which is 360 degrees in one way, 180 degrees in it. That's the spine. That's how we survived in utero. Now, when you're working on that spine, you can find out within each area the compromised, what degrees of movement are compromised. You figure that out, and then you say, okay, what are the odds of me being able to manage with these compromises in movement? And so the odds are, you can mitigate the pain if you work within a range of movements. The odds of being in pain is if you keep doing the same thing you were doing before. So now with those odds, with those high odds working in your favor or disfavor, you then look at the degree of certainty. But there is no absolute certainty either way. Are you limited by these things? So instead of saying I'm going to compromise my life, I'm going to mitigate my suffering by reducing the odds of irritating an injury. How about that? All of a sudden you're feeling better already, and all we've done is change the narrative because the anxiety is gone. You're not walking around wondering. It's when I was in the military, right? You have to walk through a minefield. Well, what's the odds of us getting blown up in this minefield? Well, the odds are 50-50. Well, I know to a high degree of certainty I'm going to let the guy I don't like the most walk ahead of me and follow his footsteps. And I'm certain that it went from 50-50 to 100% guaranteed I'm going to make it through that minefield if he does. If he makes it halfway, my odds are better anyway. You see how it works? But there is no certainty. But I want the odds in my favor. In everything in life, you want the odds favorable to you. But avoid the idea of certainty. Create options that allow you to express whatever that life ideal is for you. Yet give it options. Right?
Mm. Yeah, the way that you put it, I think the narrative is very powerful because it's a bias towards action. And I think the big problem with uncertainty is stagnation. And it's the sense that until I have the perfect answer, until I know what's going to happen, my life is on hold. So I don't know when this pandemic is going to end. And mentally, I feel like I'm just in this purgatory until I get answers. Or it could be with a relationship. I need this relationship to improve, or I need to find the right partner before I can get my life started, and it's got to be the exact right person. And then when we fixate on these things, we set up, number one, a standard that we're never going to meet. We're never going to have that perfect certainty.
That's right.
And number two, we just end up wasting a lot of time because there's always some uncertainty looming over us. And if we can't act until we get resolution, we're perpetually on hold, at least for a portion of our lives. And that's the stagnation that we've talked about. And that stagnation, as we've talked about before, is the definition of being unhealthy. We need movement, we need growth, we need development.
Yes, yes.
Even the act of stagnation takes a tremendous amount of energy. So when you talk about this anxiety and this need for certainty, I think if we've used this analogy before, the foundation of sand, and maybe that's not the exact right analogy. Another one I think of is an M.C. Escher painting, and he paints all these crazy pictures where if you take a look from afar, it looks like a reasonable scene, but you come in closer and you get stairways folding onto themselves and doors that open into mm-hmm. nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like it gets more and more complex, this world that we create in our minds. So we have to make more and more adjustments and get farther and farther away from reality to preserve the certainty that we seek. And if you want to say for certain, I'm not going to get sick, then you end up spending a tremendous amount of time on Google, researching symptoms, researching incidences of getting the virus. And the more you do this, you just keep on doing this, hoping to quell the uncertainty in your mind. But it works in the other direction. You start going down this rabbit hole, and you realize there are no answers. Every piece of information you find, there's someone with another point of view. No one has any certainty. And the more you see that, the more terrified that you feel, because you have nothing to hold on to. And that's when I think ultimately we dissolve and we break down, or you just become this mess where you can't act and you kind of sit in a room by yourself. You lock all the doors. You don't want anything bad to happen to you. You're following rituals. Maybe you're OCD and you don't want to step on any cracks, and you have to turn a doorknob three times in a certain direction to ward off mm-hmm. anything happening to your family or your job or whatever it is. So these constructs in the mind are ways to quell that uncertainty, but of course they don't work because they have nothing to do with reality. So the option that you're talking about, I think, is great because, one, it requires acceptance that there isn't just one outcome, that there's a whole range of possibilities. Two, once you have that plan, it leads to action, and you know what you're going to do, and you can get off your couch, you can get out of your head, and you can start living life, which I think is something that at times we put on hold, and you put that on hold, that's a big detriment. So talk about how you formulate that plan, because the way you've described it is, let's think about odds of certain outcomes, let's come up with contingency plans. Z, how much of that do we actually map out? I mean, do we sit down and every time we're going out to dinner, write this down on a piece of paper? Or is it more fluid than that and it's more of a mindset shift? How does that work?
It has a lot to do with the temperament of the person, mm-hmm. right? As you're trying to reframe narrative in your life, it takes a little more effort. If you found that this idea of seeking certainty has created a problem in your life, you have to undo that problem. So by using this method, you want to make it clear that this is a problem for me looking for certainty. I'm not giving myself wiggle room. The clearances are too tight for there to be movement. It sets me up for unhappiness because the nature of life is that nothing is absolutely certain, except, of course, certain phenomena in nature, death and so forth, but they don't come on a timetable that we wish them to come on. So as you change the way you think and say, hey, the odds are, and let's even make it simpler. The idea that we speak with a little more room. Yeah, let's go and get reservations at this restaurant. And it's going to be really fun, but if that doesn't work out, I have another plan. Just getting used to doing that. I'm going to do my best to get there on time. I'm going to leave a little earlier, give myself a greater opportunity, or the odds of me getting there on time will be better. But if I don't quite get there on time, here are other things I can do. So you know I'm going to have to leave earlier to wing the odds in my way, in my favor. So you build that into your life. You build that new scheme or strategy into your life. You want to be certain. This is where people blow it. You want to be certain that a person is into you. For these people like Caitlin, things like this, having all these problems. You want to be certain. You're not going to be certain. But you can frame it a certain way and say, here's what I'm going to do for myself. And I'm going to leave options. I may not meet the person that works this certain type of job, has this certain type of degree. But let me look at the bigger picture of what would make it the events in my life enjoyable, bearable, in Caitlin's case, just bearable, right? So you want to give yourself that wiggle room you need. So we all should think about, we don't want to be so tight in our ideas that if any aberration of that appears, we're completely fell apart. So always giving yourself the odds of, or giving it your best try, but not everything of you. All the time, you know, I go through things where maybe in LA, you know, you have appointments scheduled and people are running late. That's the normal in LA. So as people try to work on that, they try to leave a bit earlier, weigh the odds of the traffic being something. And we've learned to live with it. LA time is different than other places because the odds of you getting somewhere when you planned on it are left up to the whims of traffic flow, right? Mm-hmm. So oftentimes you get friends from the East Coast who ride trains everywhere, or down south where there's no really moving population of anything going on. And they can say, well, I'm going to be there at 1. They're usually there at 1. You get to California, somebody's going to be 1. That might anyway from 1:15 to 1:45. You don't even worry if they're late until it's past 1:45.
Yeah, that's why you got Indian Standard Time.
There you go.
The people in India, you have no idea whether they're going to be there at 6 o'clock or 10 o'clock. They have anywhere in between.
CP time, colored people's time. Not even on the clock, just whenever you get there. The fact that you're en route and your intention is to get there, so there you go, CP time. There you go. They have that in India and they have that everywhere else.
Oh, they have that in Native American too. It's also called Indian time. So, like, powwows never start at the time that they're supposed to.
Yeah, so it's a suggestion.
Yeah, and they'll actually say, like, okay, it starts at 3 Indian time. And then you just...
That's that means 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
Okay? So if we accept that, it's just not that heavy. Mm-hmm. But then I've seen people that just go berserk. You weren't on time. Oh, my God, I'm going to die. My whole day was built around you being on time. Well, that was the mistake right there. You built your whole reality based on someone else. You see? So as we heal ourselves and we want to do whatever we can to mitigate the anxiety, simply is changing your narrative. So instead of saying, I want to be certain, I would like the odds in my favor. Just changing the way you speak about it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do what I can to swing the odds in my favor. Or the opportunity for this to go on, I'm going to try and do my part to put it in my favor. You know then that there are so many variables that come up to any event. Does it include other people? So that's going to change the odds. Are you running errands and favors for other people? It's going to change the odds. Let's say in LA, you got to get to an appointment somewhere, but on the way there, you want to stop and do a few things before. Well, you know right there you're going to have to leave 2 hours ahead of the time you're scheduled to do whatever. If each thing you do takes 10 minutes, in LA, you got to allocate 30 minutes for that. I'm going to just stop by the market and grab a veggie burger. Well, there's a ridiculous covfefe line at the bridge. It's not going to be a 15-minute trip. It's going to be, what, 30, 45 minutes, right? So all these things you want to look at so that you're not a slave to an idea of a concrete linear construct of life. Certainty. There is no certainty.
There's this one word you used, heaviness, which I think is so apropos. Because I think a lot of the anxiety comes from the importance we attach to things that are totally meaningless. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this the way that people behave. They come up with a plan. The plan could be totally arbitrary. So it could be, let's meet at 10 a.m. It could have been 10:30. It could have been 9:45. It didn't really matter. For whatever reason, you just decided at 10. You need some time. You happen to choose 10. Now that that plan is set, any deviation from it becomes catastrophic. So guess what? We're running late. Kids are screaming. Traffic is bad. You call the other person. Maybe they haven't even left the house. And you say, you know what? Instead of 10, it's going to be more like 10:15, 10:30. So the cost is nothing. The fact that it was 10, it could have easily been 10:30 before you set the plan. But once you have that plan in place, sometimes we attach so much importance to those outcomes for no reason. And that's where you get the freakouts that you're talking about. Oh my God, this is throwing off my whole day. I don't know what to do. It's going to be this cascade of disaster, which is going to completely derail everything that I was hoping to achieve. Why? I mean, the thing that we planned for to begin with, it wasn't that important. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we have a plan, it's just kind of strange. And maybe that's something that can come out of this exercise in fluidity, in contingency planning, learning not to attach too much importance to any given thing, unless it's really important. So if you're trying to go out and eat, the really important thing is that you get some food. Where you get it, how you get it, doesn't matter so much. Make sure that you've got your bases covered so you're not starving for a few weeks. Mm-hmm. That's a catastrophic scenario.
Right.
But if you've got that, you got a supply of food in your house, and you mm-hmm. know that worst case scenario, you can end up at home, mm-hmm. so be it. You can roll with the punches. Mm-hmm. You can be more fluid. And I would just add that to your recommendation of looking at the odds. I think changing the importance we attach to any given outcome, it goes hand in hand with playing the odds and looking at different options.
Yeah, we live in interesting times, Vin, and people are suffering from anxiety, and it's turning into real tangible diseases. Mm-hmm. You know, as working with people on a daily basis and a regular basis and watching the spike in diseases that are causally rooted in anxiety, digestive problems of all kinds, bone degeneration due to malnourishment because the stomach isn't working anymore. You're seeing more and more of that. So the more that we can reduce the energetic spillage caused by anxiousness, anxiety, the better we do. The more we can do simple, sustainable, passive things. These are really easy things to do. It's changing your narrative. Even if you don't believe it, experiment with it. Just like you said, I was listening to you talk, Vin, and how many times have somebody been upset because things didn't work out exactly the way we wanted, but it was a petty thing. It was a really petty thing. Well, I was going to Chez Fufu and I had a reservation, and when I got there, the plate wasn't, or the table wasn't ready. They can't even enjoy their meal anymore. The fact that you went to Chez Fufu should have been just fun. Let's just go to Chez Fufu's and see what happens. Moderately decent food, it's a status symbol. Don't take it that serious. Pick your battles in life, my God. And then if it doesn't work out just right, other options arise. And it extends to all ends of life, right? I tell single people all the time, what I hear from them is they want certainly for sure that they're going to meet this absolutely perfect person for them, right? They have a whole bio data laid out, the resume is laid out, they have a anime fantasy of what they look like. You know, John Tate is watching this hentai porn and he wants to get this super duper girl. And I tell him, look, I'm not asking you to lower your standards. I'm not asking you to do that. I'm asking you to be realistic. Okay? You don't have that much to offer, all right, anybody. So find somebody who has an equal offering in life as you do. Then it's not going to be the anime supergirl. It's going to be, you know, some Becky at Starbucks or something that is just looking for a moderate to mediocre life with somebody just like you. And that gives you such relief that you can actually now, the odds of you finding a soulmate, a partner in life, has just increased in your favor. You see? So it's just changing your narrative. And on so many levels, look, we're watching people being ravaged. I just saw where somebody, I guess, was shooting somebody because they didn't wear a mask or asked to wear a mask. And this whole person's, the family's life has been ruined. Somebody's going to prison for life. And it's like, my God, you want this certainty in your life that you build your life from, but there is none. The odds are, is the best way to approach it.
So Z, this anxiety that we've talked about this so many times. It's such a disease. It's debilitating.
Oh, it's the cancer of modern man.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's incredible that it's become so normalized. It's something that you don't even realize until you step back and become attuned to it. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of reasons for it, but I think this need for control, this need for certainty, is certainly close to the top of the list, if not at the top, in terms of what causes our anxiety, our urgency, our need for things to work out in a certain way. And that is just a huge mental cost. You think about the mental energy trying to convince yourself that things are going to work out the way you want. Or even beyond that, trying to control other people and the way that they behave and interact just so you can get your perfect day, which isn't even that special. It's not that different from what you would have done anyway. It's just maybe some satisfaction you get from being able to organize the world in a particular fashion. The cost of that is tremendous. It weighs on you. It makes you physically ill. It creates that stagnation, so you're not moving forward in life. And I love the way you've put this, of just changing your narrative, because I've seen the exact same thing that you're talking about. And maybe you're able to put it in terms that are a little more simple. So we get away from the statistics and just think in terms of the word odds. What is likely to happen? Can I tilt the odds in my favor? And can I have a plan B and a plan C? Then you're free. Then you don't have to worry about it. You know what you need to do. You're doing the best that you can. You're taking action. And you know the downside isn't catastrophic, because if it doesn't work out the way you want, you can go eat somewhere else, you can change your plan.
Sure.
You can do whatever the hell you need to do, and you can move forward in your life. So that's got to be much healthier physically and mentally. And I think the other aspect of it, which we didn't explore as much, but we touched on in the beginning, is this whole aspect of opportunity. You free yourself to take a broader perspective. It's like you can get away from the trees. You can fly up to that 50,000 foot level. You can see the terrain. You can see where different things are headed, and you can navigate. So if you're always focused on just working a particular job and advancing at a certain rate, maybe you could do something different in a different industry, or you could start your own business. You never even consider it. So the possibilities in life expand tremendously, and that's also got to be a lot more fulfilling. So I think the way you put it is correct. Let's think in terms of odds. Let's think in terms of contingency. Let's realize that nothing that we do, I shouldn't say nothing, but most things that we do, it's not catastrophic whether it works out or it doesn't. We can flow through life. We can accept the plan B and the plan C. We can be content with whatever life presents. And it's a much healthier way to live. And it's a way to get beyond the anxiety that, especially at times like this, it can just feel completely overwhelming.
That's right. So I would say in closing, Vin, as we navigate the frontier of the uncertain, changing the narrative, considering the odds of, and then adjusting those odds in your favor. by giving yourself options, giving yourself wiggle room, planning in such a way that the plans are not rigid, but they're fluid and with options. Thus, it mitigates the anxiety. In the mitigation of that anxiety, it allows your immune system to be less compromised. And again, getting through this life with the fewest encumbrances as possible, thus mitigating your suffering.
If you enjoyed the show, please consider leaving us a review on Podbean, iTunes, or your favorite podcasting app. Each 5-star review helps us bring you more unique and insightful content. Learn more at dharmamedia.com. Peace.